corrupt them. The education budget division will come to order. And members, just a reminder that we are on TV this morning, and do not yet have a quorum, but hopefully in a few minutes we will. This is the third hearing that we've had on Senate File 2716, which is Senator Saltzman's legislation related to the charter schools facilities proposal. Welcome, Senator Saltzman. And the last time, I believe, we had in-depth discussion about understanding exactly how your proposal works. And it is a quite an intricate proposal, creating something new that would be, I think, very helpful in terms of addressing the facilities needs for our charter schools. So welcome, Senator Saltzman.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate, you know, the time that you've given to this discussion, and it is a new model for how we fund and support our charter schools and their need for quality facilities in our state, and also to address some of the issues that have come forward as we've discussed this, and as we've heard from a number of people who have testified that we have seen incredible growth within our charter schools in Minnesota, and at some point you have to step back and look at if the current funding stream and policies are working, and are we at a different place in time. And so I hope that we look at this bill as a significant step forward in strengthening the support around our charter schools, but also embedding some policies that respond to the fact they are public facilities and public schools that are funded with public dollars, and to ensure that the public feels comfortable with those investments, that they are transparent, and that we have, again, the oversight that I think is very important. I do want to just thank everyone, again, who has worked on this bill. And since this bill was heard last Thursday, there have been a number of meetings. I, again, want to thank, you know, our finance department, which is Minnesota Management and Budget. I believe Commissioner Hansen, if he's not here, will be. He is here, you know, today to speak to this bill. They have been incredibly helpful, because I don't think that the education you know, committee and our management and budget department work together all that often. And so it's been a pleasure to work with them, and we've learned a lot from each other. But I think we now have a bill that addresses really all the significant concerns that have been brought forward. So I do have the A25 amendment, which reflects work that has been done this past week that addresses a number of issues, and Mr. Nauman will go through it shortly to just, you know, speak about the specific things. But what we have done is we've worked with a number of specific schools that have brought concerns to us. For those of you who participated in our charter school working group, one of our last meetings, we heard from former Congressman Frank Riggs, who was from California, and who has started the Charter School Development Corporation, which is a national corporation which supports the development of quality charter school facilities. And three of our schools in Minnesota are working with them, and we address their specific concerns, and we believe we have an excellent transition plan for them. And also, there is new language in the bill that will allow us to access the financing that they provide with startup schools. We have also, you know, addressed some of the concerns of MACs that has been brought forward. We've also then tried to find where there's agreement. And so we have tried to reach a compromise position on a number of these items. But if Mr. Nauman would like to go through the A25 at this point in time, and if there are questions afterwards as to, you know, further explanations of of what went into to reaching this particular language, I'd be very happy to do that.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Saltzman. We still don't have a quorum yet, but the 825 amendment, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman and members, first I'll apologize for my voice. I have picked up a bug somewhere along the way. Beginning on line one, Darren backs up. on line 1.3 of the amendment begins by eliminating the AYP cooperative language that was part of section 6 of the bill and replaces it with an exception to the primary purpose paragraph, commonly referred to as paragraph A. I think everybody is pretty familiar with what that paragraph does. And in this case, it adds an exception for an organization that participates in certain federal programs and also allows the commissioner to disallow that paragraph if it is believed in the commissioner's judgment that the purpose of the organization, the charter school is proposing to lease for the purposes of purchasing a building. Section line 1.12 corrects some incorrect terminology. Last week, lines 1.13 through 1.26 addresses an issue that Mr. Piccolo brought up last week. Now that we're requiring charter schools to do a fair bit more reporting, what should be done annually, what should be done on an as-needed basis, the language 1.13 through 1.26 addresses that change for lease aid, and of course we'll see it again in a couple of lines for transition aid. On line 1.27 is a technical clarification to specify education site in the building lease aid formula. This was a recommendation from the department to clarify how the formula works. As I mentioned before, the Piccolo change, as I call it, is recommended for transition aid beginning on line 1.29 and proceeding through 2.4. As a result of that, those changes, there's some paragraph lettering that needs to be adjusted, 2.5 and 2.6. The department's change on education sites has a couple of locations. That occurs again, lines 2.7 through 2.10. Again, some paragraph lettering changes. And yesterday, in conversations with the department, they recommend that it would be administratively cleaner to appropriate the charter school facilities building lease all together as a single line item. So in the future, if this becomes law, you'll see it as a single line item. And to accomplish that, similar to how we do general education aid, where we've got equity and operating capital and a whole collection of 13, 14 programs all bundled together in a single appropriation, we accomplish that same kind of mechanism with the additional section 17 that begins on line 2.13. Essentially, it creates the facilities or the building aid as the sum of the three building lease aid, facilities aid, and building lease transition aid. So that's more of a technical nature, but it improves the administration of the program. It's my understanding that on line 2.20 is a recommendation from Senator Olson to change the word solicit to accept. It appeared that the authority would be soliciting participation amongst charter schools, and I think if I understand that correctly, Senator Olson recommended a word choice change. Line 2.21 is a recommendation from the Charter Schools Association to adjust the pupil projections from sustainable to stable or growing. That occurs in two places. You'll see it subsequently. Members recall last week there was conversation about the student performance measurement being different for the 5-year and the 8-year. We've gone back and scrubbed that and understand that the correct version was the first instance on the 5-year, and we just simply didn't pick it up in the 8-year, so this corrects that. The word choice stable, sustainable on 2.27 is also picked up. We had a relic of some of the formula changes that wasn't picked up previously, and lines 2.28 through 2.31 corrects the limitation on an endorsed charter school limit, basically the limit of bonding that they can take out. Previously, it was measured as 84% of their facilities aid, and now it's being expressed in terms of the general education deduction as 16%. We think that that's a little bit clearer. Section, correction, line 2.33 brings in the appropriation from last year's K-12 bill for the charter school building lease aid program and adjusts it downward beginning in fiscal 11. This reflects the fact that it's now going to be appropriated as school charter school building aid, and we'll see an appropriation for that subsequently, so the dollars are moving from one appropriation line to the other. On 3.10, this subdivision will be familiar to members. It's the list of charter schools that are eligible to receive building lease transition aid. Three charter schools were added to reflect conversations that Senator Salzman had with the Charter School Development Corporation. So on line 3.25, the Great River School was added. On line 4.3, the Yinghua Academy was added. And on line 4.6, the Hiawatha Leadership Academy was added. Staff felt it would be easier just to have the entire list viewable in the amendment for members. So we just deleted the original subdivision and added it back. Mr. Chairman and members, section 34, our correction, 4.8, line 4.8, section 31, is added to the bill. This allows at the commissioner's discretion for a charter school that has been unable to renegotiate its lease in fiscal year 11 to receive a extension into fiscal year 12 of the grandfather. And that grandfather extension will be at a 50% level. So it's the difference between what your grandfather level was in the prior year and the cap multiplied times 0.5. So you get a 50%. It's essentially a phasing down of that grandfather in fiscal 12 if, in the commissioner's judgment, a charter school attempted to renegotiate but was unable to do so for whatever reason.
Mr. Chairman?
Just a second. We do have a quorum, and Senator Salzman moves the A25 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nauman, I just haven't tracked this in here. Clarify for me, the listing of all of the schools, is that in a section that goes into statute or into session law?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator Olson, it goes into session law.
Thank you.
Mr. Nauman.
And Mr. Chairman and member, the last section of the amendment, as promised, is the appropriation for the newly titled charter school building aid, which is in permanent, which references section 124D11, subdivision 4E, which is that section of law that added all three of the line items together.
Okay. Any questions that members have? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Senator Stump. I apologize. I was a little bit late, so I missed the beginning of the discussion on the amendment. Could Senator Salzman or Mr. Nauman just go through the very first paragraph, B14 to 111, which schools that would apply to?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, I think the way to think about this paragraph is it's an exception to the primary purpose lease section, and it fundamentally addresses the charter school building, charter school
development corporation.
Development corporation. I think that it was felt that they were doing some good work in the state, and that an exception, that the commissioner should be allowed to create an exception for them to continue to do that work and act as a landlord for charter schools. But it was also important to the author that they not, that this not create an exception to get around the primary aspect that that leases should be leases, and that this should not be a line item to do a lease to purchase. And that's what that last sentence attempts to address.
Just to add to that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Salzman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson. Also note that on line 3.25, the charter school number 4048, which is, I believe in your district,
correct,
is added into the transition category so they can continue their current relationship with the Charter School Development Corporation. The change would be is that if they continue for the next 20 years, I think it's a 20-year loan, and I'm not sure where they're at in that particular timeline, that at the end of that period, if they do not refinance and go to the Charter School Authority, that they would, at the end of that period, own the building, which is a good thing. And we've, you know, talked to the Charter School Development Corporation about that. And so that is to, you know, protect those schools that are currently using that particular process. Although in talking with the Charter School Development Corporation, you know, their intent is not to provide long-term financing, but to provide initial financing until a school is more stable and could go out on its own and then secure a refinancing, which in this case we then have a authority in place to help that school with more affordable financing longer term. So that is how that is covered.
Okay. If there are no other questions on that, we do have a list of people who we would like to who would like to testify, and should I work my way down that list? Commissioner of Management and Budget, Mr. Commissioner Hansen. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members, and no, I didn't wander into the wrong room. I am here because of the, and we've been working with the author, Senator Saltzman, regarding the potential financial and credit risks of the state of establishing the Charter Schools Facility Authority. And whenever we talk about credit and managing debt, that's when the Department of Management and Budget gets involved. It's a big part of what we do. It's more than just the bonding bills that you see flying out of both bodies. So that is why we're here. We have worked very well with the Senator and with Mr. Nauman in alleviating our concerns in the bill, and we support it the way it's drafted now with the amendment that went on. In particular, we like the that Senator Saltzman incorporated the 20-year revenue bonds, and that the revenue bonds be limited for 20 years. And while I recognize that this will reduce how much a charter school might be able to leverage their facilities aid to fund a project, we believe it will encourage schools to look at renovating existing space rather than building a new facility, another objective that I think we share with Senator Saltzman. And finally, I believe that the administration believes that the current version of the bill would provide for greater transparency in the use of state resources that fund facilities for charter schools, as well as a lower cost of borrowing for those charter schools that are strong from both an educational achievement and financial perspective. So I think we've worked out all of our concerns, and we would like to see it go forward. And I can answer any questions that you might have.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. Is there a lot of difference? I believe the revenue or the general obligation bonds that we use for most of our bonding projects, Those are 20-year bonds. Are there other bonds that we use that are 20-year bonds too?
We generally, whether it's revenue bonds or and joining me is Kathy Cardell, our Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management. You want to go ahead?
Welcome, Ms. Cardell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Kathy Cardell, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Management and Budget. As you indicated, the state's general obligation debt is limited by constitutional requirements to 20 years. In some cases, we do sell those bonds for shorter terms for reasons related to the particular source of or projects that we're funding. The state has also issued, through Management and Budget, revenue bonds to fund the 911 backbone, emergency communications backbone. Those revenue bonds have actually been structured with 15-year maturities. And then there are others, state agencies that issue revenue bonds. We are not involved as directly in those, Housing Finance Authority. the Public Facilities Authority. They do 20-year bonds, revenue bonds. MHFA does 30-year.
Mr. Chairman, we don't go more than 20 years. And we are widely respected by credit markets and considered a good debt management state because we don't we pay our bonds back early, pay our debt back early, and we don't expand it beyond 20 years.
The two other questions I have. One is the way this will be structured is that it will be a separate fund that'll be overseen by the Department of Management and Budget. Is that a way of looking at it?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the way that this is structured is that the Charter School Facilities Authority would have responsibility for agreeing to the terms and conditions of each financing, not just management and budget, although we are clearly one of the members of the board and probably one of the few that has debt issuance experience. The way I think practically, Mr. Chairman, that this would work is that the school would enter into a loan agreement with a provider of funds, whether it's a bank, whether it's a broker-dealer, that loan agreement, the payments that they will make under that loan agreement would be used to secure the revenue bonds that would be issued. And those revenue bonds, presumably the loan agreement is going to be repaid from the facilities aid that's authorized in the bill.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner, is there a benefit that this program would receive because it is under it's under the authority, but it is associated with the state of Minnesota, and the state of Minnesota generally has, you know, we've got some rocky, some waves right now, but hopefully in the near future, you know, we'll be back on a fairly good, you know, financial footing. So would lenders look at that and say, because we have a good credit rating and because we've, you know, there's some kind of an association between the authority and the state, they would receive a benefit, whether it's a reduction in interest or whatever?
Mr. Chairman, we are ultimately responsible if a school if a charter school defaults. And to the extent that we are manage our debt well and our budget well, yes. There's some benefit.
And just to add to that, Mr. Chairman, maybe a little too strong to say ultimately responsible, but the fact is that what makes this different than a charter school going out and securing financing on their own is the existence of the credit enhancement account. That's what's truly the unique feature of this. And that's why we were concerned about it, because ultimately the credit enhancement account is being funded with state resources. The repayment of any obligations is coming from state resources. I know many of you are familiar with the school credit enhancement program that's extremely heavily used by public school districts for their debt. I don't want you to think that the credit quality of this will be comparable to that in any shape or form. I mean, Frank, just to be perfectly honest, public schools have a much stronger ability to repay their obligations than charter schools do.
Sure.
But the credit enhancement account provides an additional source of security that should, in conjunction with the credit quality of the individual schools and the way that the bill is drafted, we're trying to, you know, push participation to the strongest schools should allow them to achieve a lower interest cost than what they would be receiving without it.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Nauman.
Just to echo Assistant Commissioner's point, on page 26 of the bill, there's language that echoes fairly clearly that this is not public debt. The full faith and credit taxing powers of the state are not pledged. But the benefit of this mechanism is, as the Assistant Commissioner stated, the existence of the credit enhancement account.
Okay. Senator Olson and then Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, I don't profess to have great knowledge in this debt management issue, but as we start this new authority, just listening to your comments and the importance of strengthening it to the greatest extent, is there any merit at all to having for a period of time, you know, a few years into this, the management and budget actually having a sign-off on those decisions? You know, there's a member there, you're administering it, but just give it a little bit more of an oversight or authority as it gets, as it tests its wings, in order to assure that that power that you give to, or the authenticity that comes from the state track record is truly experienced, and this authority would have that benefit. I don't know if that's out of line or not, but I just, what was it?
Ms. Cardell?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I'm not sure whether that's helpful or not, or how you might craft this. I mean, presumably all of the participants in the board or in the facilities authority are going to be knowledgeable people the way that it's drafted. I mean, they're not going to be ignorant of debt. I'm not sure if that's any more valuable to have that as some sort of a separate sign-off, perhaps. I am kind of interested in what the rest of the group thinks. I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. Believe me, if I'm involved and I don't think it's a good idea, I'm going to say so. But, mm-hmm. But
Mr. Chairman, with appointees, saying was not necessarily permanently, but for a period of time, that there be kind of the requirement of that good housekeeping seal of approval of the management and budget on those decisions to kind of assure that we are heading down the right track with it. But that's
just want Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, five out of the eight members of the authority are appointed by the governor. And I do think the reality is that it would be very unusual for the debt to be issued if the management and budget commissioner were to be opposed to it.
So you feel that
I think you're going to get that anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Commissioner, thank you for being here. I want to make sure I understand what happens here, and I know that we all anticipate that this is going to be, that we're not going to have failures of schools and so forth, but I want to understand what happens if there is indeed a failure, if there is a school that exercises this funding through this structure, goes out of business, defaults on the loan. What happens? Describe what is going to happen if we have a school that goes through some worst case scenario.
Ms. Cardell?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, and I agree. I hope that we're structuring this in a way that becomes a more remote possibility. But practically speaking, the way that this is structured is that there will be a certain period of time, because there will be dollars that will be both initially capitalizing that credit enhancement account, as well as ongoing dollars that are deposited by schools that are participating. And so there will be an amount of time whereby we can assess whether or not that school, so the debt service continues to be paid. So effectively, there is no default because the debt service is being paid. But to work out, and I think there's provisions, I don't remember what section of the law, but provisions for that school to work with the Department of Education to determine a financial plan to work out of it. Ultimately, there are options of either the charter school basically defaulting, the bond or the facility is sold. That's one of the reasons why we insisted that there be some provisions in here to allow that there be a mortgage on the facility for the benefit of bondholders, so that bondholders can be repaid. Now, the question is whether or not there will be sold at enough of a value that it is fully able to repay bondholders. But as Mr. Nauman pointed out, it is ultimately revenue bonds. And so there is no recourse to the state, no ability to compel or a levy or any other any other sort of payment. So I think what typically happens is a workout period where we figure out how much debt is remaining, what the value of the facility is, can the facility be sold in an amount that is sufficient to repay the bondholders, and the obligation is extinguished.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, I thank you. To what extent or what capacity does this authority have to sustain loss? I'm assuming that there's going to be none. There will be no losses. But I'm trying to think that if there are, if one school sustains a loss, is this going to put a crimp on the fund itself? If
yes.
Two, if three, what is the capacity to absorb this risk that this fund may have?
Senator Hand, when I go through this legislation, it seems to me that we are attempting, or all the parties that have been involved are attempting to err on a conservative side, which I think is a good foundation to start. And then as we move forward, we may find out that maybe we're erring on a too conservative side. But I think that's, at least that's the feel I have, is that we are starting out with organizations like management and budget and the Department of Education just a good foundation that it would be hard to really see how we would end up having repetitive bad loans or mortgages given the legislation. But
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on what you're saying, when this first came to us, I didn't like it at all. Any kind of new any kind of new borrowing for the state, there's an institutional bias at management and budget, and then I have my own personal institutional bias. But Senator Saltzman and we work together, and I think that this is conservative enough, and the policy reasons behind the bill are such that it's important that we give this a try. But that's one of the reasons why we want to limit it to 20 years, keep it focused, and then keep an eye on it to make sure we don't have anything go sour. But we have a pretty strong institutional bias against debt.
Ms. Cardell.
I'm sorry, Senator Hahn, but Mr. Chairman, and the other thing that we added to this bill, which was not there in the initial draft, is a limitation as to how much debt can be issued under the program to $150 million, which is pretty small by revenue bond standards of other revenue bond programs in the state. But I appreciate Senator Hahn's question, because I think I don't think we can answer that question. I think a lot depends. I think it's very important that MDA came up with funds to provide some additional or initial capitalization of this credit enhancement account, because without that, I think that account would have not been very beneficial to any early participants. I think that a lot will depend on who is in this program and at what size and magnitude, because I think that ultimately for the authority and for those of us that are staffing the authority, your question is exactly what we're going to have to be looking at in terms of considering the possible impact on the fund in the repayment of those bonds when an application would come before us.
Senator Hahn's always been a very good constructive critic, and we appreciate that eye for critical thinking. So,
well,
Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman, you're kind to say that. I just want to make sure I understand what we're doing, and I'll tell you part of the concern that I'm thinking about here is that there is enough of an arm's length relationship so that decisions are not made to protect to not look at what is going on as an economic transaction, but to look at it as, well, what does this do to the program? And are we going to make decisions to protect a program that may, in fact, mm-hmm. not be sound? And it's that structure that I'm a little bit unclear about, how we preserve that strict arm's length kind of relationship between what we're doing here and what we're doing over here. We've got two parts of government working together, and sometimes that doesn't always yield objective thinking on these things, and that's my concern.
Senator Salzman?
Right. On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I think that's when you look at the authority, you have the experts who understand finance, but then you also have the advocates from charter schools. We also have a representative from our school board association, because again, we talked about that last week about, you know, trying to build relationships. And so the other point is that I would hope that if this moves forward and there are recommendations for we could make this better next year, some things come up, that no one feels that we can't touch this for 20 years. I mean, this is the program and off it goes, but that we may learn from some things and be able to tweak this as needed to make it a more efficient program. The other thing, I think, as we talk about, you know, the policy behind this is that there's the idea of transparency, there's the idea of better interest rates. The other piece of this is also efficiency, and I think that, you know, Superintendent Tofty, who was here last week, talked about the fact that right now there's sort of a scattered, you know, approach to this of charter schools, where do I go to for, you know, assistance in, you know, securing a quality facility, and that this will be a way to have a process that is managed by, you know, professionals on the state level, again, and also working with their education department and also working with our finance folks. So there's a number of ways here to look at how we can do this more efficiently to do these kinds of transactions, potentially at a, you know, significantly lower cost.
Commissioner Hansen.
Just to follow up, Senator Hand. First, you're asking a lot of the questions I did when I first saw. I would have almost believed you found my notes. So I think you're asking all the right questions that we have to talk about. And then we have a history and track record through the PFA of working with different agencies and these type of issues where there is a policy objective over here that you're trying to achieve, and then there's debt management that's a part of it. So we have the debt management community and state government actually works pretty well together to achieve the policy goals.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Commissioner Hansen and Ms. Cardell.
Thank you.
For sharing your comments.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And please don't wait too long to come back. We appreciate it.
I don't know about that.
We have Mr. Piccolo. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak on this bill. First, again, I want to thank Senator Salzman for her leadership in taking on this challenging issue of how to effectively and cost-efficiently provide facilities for charter schools. It's been a perplexing issue for now 18 years since the first charter school opened in 1992. As you know, it is a very complex issue with a lot of nuances that seem to arise every day as this thing has moved forward. But it also has philosophical, policy, and technical issues and concerns. On a philosophical level, this bill raises the questions about what is the role in terms of facilities, in terms of the state's role, the authorizer's role, the school's role, the public's role, the private market role, and so forth. And I think that is an issue that I think this bill sets a framework for. Some people will like that framework, and some people will not like that philosophical framework. On the policy level, it raises a couple distinct issues. One is about whether or not schools should own buildings directly or indirectly, or whether schools should, as the original law said, lease only. So this bill again clarifies that we are setting a state policy of allowing direct ownership of buildings. In terms of the bill and the technical issues, it raises a number of issues that have been discussed over the last couple hearings. Today, I just want to take the time to talk about a couple, three or four things that we still see as issues at the, I think, the technical level of the bill. Some are kind of policy-related and so forth. One of the things we have proposed from the very beginning of this discussion is that there be some incentive put into the legislation for schools that lease buildings. Because right now the system is stacked in favor of landlords who know that every school gets $1,200 per kid. And so most leases come to schools with $1,200 per kid as the lease cost. And so we would recommend again that the incentive be put in to allow up to 10% or so of lease aid to be utilized by the school for maintenance and custodial building-related costs. That way it gives some leverage to the schools in negotiating with landlords, and we believe all we have to do is change one sentence in the bill and we can accomplish that piece. We also still have some concerns about the academic requirements. We talked about this last Thursday, and we have had discussions with Senator Saltzman about some alternatives, and we have been working on some language, and I'll have some language to her today on that. But a menu of things in terms of academic requirements, because all of our schools are very different. Some of our schools focused on kids who are overaged, under-credited kids, and to tie whether or not they could have a facility to the state test means they would never qualify. So we have taken some of the ideas that were mentioned even in the discussion last Thursday, and we've been working with schools to come up with some language. We do have some language that people are reviewing actually this morning. We'll have to the senator by noon. Third, we still have some concerns about the definition in Section 6 of the bill that there has been an amendment to with regard to the Charter School Development Corporation, the exemption. We still believe the original underlying definition of who a charter school can lease from is confusing, and we propose that there be actually two definitions, one to basically state that affiliated billing companies are eliminated, and then one for a definition that I think gets to the other issue of pseudo building companies, and so we would recommend the clarification there. In terms of lease aid for schools that have been grandfathered, we believe that if there's going to be reduction, that there needs to be a longer time. There are some schools that would face $120,000-$130,000 in a reduction of lease aid that are grandfathered in. So we would especially like to say that we would oppose the section that says it's up to the commissioner. I think if the school documents it, that it should be automatic rather than at the discretion of the commissioner, an extension of the lease grandfather lease aid. And then the last thing I would raise is the issue of startup aid, which is eliminated after fiscal 12. We think the idea of taking the startup aid for fiscal 12 to set up the credit enhancement account is okay because there have been no schools approved for fiscal 12 yet because the process is still not there yet for schools to be approved. So, but we oppose the elimination of startup aid in fiscal 13. That'd be a major change in policy. And so we oppose that. So those are some of the concerns. And again, I just want to say we continue to try to work and present alternatives for language to address these issues and are committed to doing that.
Thank you very much, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Piccolo. With regard to the students' scores who are older that you mentioned, I'm a little bit confused as to what would be wrong with the language in the amendment. I wasn't here during that discussion, so I might have missed it. But as I read the amendment, it looks like we're just talking about growth. We're not talking about absolute scores. So why wouldn't you want those students to be held to account with regard to growth?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Boff, I think what an example is, we have several schools where the program is really designed to deal with kids who are overaged, who've dropped out or so forth, and they come back to school in age 17. Okay, this says you have to have a 3-year on MCAs. Well, if they come back in their senior year, there is not an MCA at 12th grade. So we would propose some alternative ways of demonstrating academic growth by the school. We are not opposed to an academic growth piece, but just that there's only one way of doing that.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is appropriate, but I think that we ought to discuss the recommendation, and I would, if it would take an amendment to put it on the table to do that, of that set-aside for maintenance and upkeep of lease aid to give them a better handle in negotiations of leases. I'm not sure just where it would go, but I think you were proposing approximately a 10% set-aside for maintenance and upkeep, or is that, Mr. Piccolo, was that what you were suggesting?
Mr. Piccolo?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes, that's what we would recommend. And in terms of where it would go, I had it listed here. It's under the lease aid section.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Nauman could probably figure that out pretty fast too. But it is as to where the money would go. It was for custodial services, maintenance, upkeep. I don't know what terminology you used.
Mr. Chairman,
just at least discuss it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we have had conversations with the executive branch on this issue when Mr. Piccolo brought this forth before. And I think that one of the issues here is that when a school goes through the leasing process, the department's been pretty clear with staff that the way that this is considered is that a charter school should work with the leaser on the front end and determine what facilities improvements need to be made. And I think there's sort of an understanding that some of that gets built in at the front end, but that assuming that there should be operation and maintenance costs that are allowable as part of an additional costs, a cost added on top of the lease, would be a bit of a concern, is my understanding about that.
So, Mr. Chairman, I understand the, I understand that, but I also understand the fact that wherever they are in the state, if you give a certain dollar per student, the person that's leasing knows that that's the money available. Is there any other factor in there in terms of market value or the rental value or lease value in a given area that says that you don't, that gives you a power to not squander that money if it's not needed just because that's what the demand is? That's the point that you're trying to get at. Whether this is the right answer to it, I'm not wed to that. But do you see any things that you're proposing that empower people to be cost effective in their lease negotiations?
It's called
Senator Saltzman. You're trying.
It's called capitalism.
Right. Yes, Mr. Chair, I could just
Senator
add.
Senator Saltzman.
Right. At this point, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, we have spent actually significant time talking about this because the issue is that you can visit a lot of different charter schools across the state and look at their leases, and they're all pretty much the same, and yet they represent many different facilities. So I think you're absolutely correct that everyone can figure out how much lease aid is available. We have had extensive conversations with even some of the landlords and looked at potential language that, should to encourage that when you receive lease aid, how are you maintaining your buildings? You know, is there an incentive that this lease doesn't just flow through, that it's maintaining the quality of the facility, not improvements necessarily, but maintaining them, which is part of any lease. But I have respected the work with the department, and in this all, if it's to encourage better negotiations, then it should somehow mean that lease aid potentially would go down, because. And so if you're just transferring that the school can use it over on this side, it's providing dollars to the school. It's not necessarily bringing lease aid down. So it may be something that we need to keep working on, but I think it did seem like a real simple amendment, and we've looked at a lot of different proposals. But I do want Dr. Melcher maybe to address some of the concerns of the department.
Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman, before he
Senator
does.
Senator Olson?
I think this gets at the point that Senator Hahn also was raising. We are creating a structure here that is going to favor probably purchase. And, you know, I don't know if we prepare authorizers to, with some of the skills and appropriate, how to look at whether leasing is better than purchase. But if our leasing structure is such that it's, you know, the winner take all, or somebody's got somebody over the barrel and they get everything that's there, we're essentially taking any negotiation away because the dollars are known. And I don't even think that that's really – maybe capitalism, but it isn't necessarily free market. But I think we've got some responsibility, too, with public resources, not to just pad things that are inappropriately. So
Senator Olson,
that's what I'm trying to
– I think the Department of Administration has done several studies, at least in the tenure that I've been on the Finance and Bonding Committee. And they've come back, I think, every time and said that rather than the state of Minnesota renting all these facilities, and the classic example was the Department of Revenue building across the river, mm-hmm. it's better for us to build and own the facility, much cheaper in the long run. But, I mean, sometimes you can't always have, own a building. I mean, we have... Mm-hmm. Now I think many options with buildings that are vacant and can be bought relatively easily or rented relatively low. And I think that's true all over the state. The Department of Natural Resources in many cases have moved into vacated businesses and quite often done it at a very reasonable price. Mm-hmm. Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. I just wanted to point out that the existing language of the lease aid formula, which is on page 17, line 3 of the bill, specifies that a charter school must not use building lease aid it receives for custodial, maintenance services, utility, or other operating costs. And we do have, in fact, about a third of the charter schools that are receiving less than the $1,200 per pupil unit. So if there was language added that would allow charter schools to use their lease aid to pay for utilities, custodial, those kinds of things, that would be a fiscal impact to the state. You'd expect to see those schools that are under the $1,200 go up to the $1,200 level. And if that's the policy of the legislature, that would be fine. But currently, that's something that's not allowed and that would be a fiscal impact to the state. We feel like if we're looking at not these kinds of things, but at kind of leasehold improvements to the facility itself, that the best policy if the school is leasing from the landlord is to have the landlord take care of those improvements, to have those reflected in the lease cost and capitalized over a longer period of time, rather than having the charter school pay for those up front. And then in the event that the charter school ceased leasing from the landlord, then basically the state would have paid for those improvements to the building that would no longer be benefiting the school in the event that they were to terminate and move somewhere else.
Thank you, Dr. Melcher. Okay, Senator Anderson, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I just wanted to comment after what you said to keep in mind that in the city of St. Paul, we have a great deal of tax-exempt property, and government property is a big part of that. We also have a lot of charter schools. And so just something to keep in mind. We hear a lot from your part of the state, Senator Stump, about the concern about loss of tax base, and so and the payments that we give as compensation to that, the PILT payments. So I just want to make sure people understand there is somewhat of a cost to the local community when there's a great deal of public ownership of those government buildings. So just something that is a factor for us in our community. There's sometimes an advantage to having privately owned and leased property.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Any other? Mr. Nathan? Welcome, Mr. Nathan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Nathan. I direct the Center for School Change at McAllister College, and I am not here as a representative of McAllister or any other entity other than our own. I want to commend the chair for giving this historic bill substantial time, because I think it is historic and critical. It is critical not only for youngsters, it's critical for the state to move ahead in its leadership and for taxpayers to make the very best possible use of dollars. So I want to try to briefly ask and answer three questions. The three questions are, is this, first, good for the state and taxpayers? Secondly, is it good for K through 12 public education? And third, is it good for the goal of enhancing more excellent, not just more, but more excellent charter public schools? I think that the answers to each of those questions is yes, and I think that Senator Salzman and the chair, and working together, have crafted something that will again be cited as other things that you have worked on in this room as nation-leading. So the first question, is this good for taxpayers and is this good for the state? I think the answer is yes, because all money that flows to our public schools, whether they're district or charter, comes from taxpayers. Each of us is a taxpayer, and we need to be concerned about making the best possible use of the funds that the taxpayers provide. And certainly today is a good day to mention that. But not just today. Every day, and I know from long experience in watching the chair that he is a rigorous and thoughtful proponent of making the best possible use of the money. And I would say to you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is first and foremost about a thoughtful use of public funds. As was mentioned just a few minutes ago, economically we know that it makes more sense to purchase rather than simply lease. For years and years. And Senator Salzman, with whom I've met a number of times on this and who has been extraordinary in meeting with a wide range of people, some of whom vigorously disagree with her, has made this point in several meetings. And we have gone through a number of examples of people, for example, who have a building that's worth $1.8 million, but they've already received lease aid that's $2 million. Now, there are reasons that these things have happened. But on balance, it is better for the state, for taxpayers, in cases where the school has demonstrated that is a responsible use of taxpayers' dollars and that it is making constructive progress in helping youngsters achieve. And both of those are important, not just one, both. So I don't think that all the schools should be allowed to own. And I know that within the charter community there is some disagreement about that. But I don't think that just because a school continues to exist and just because kids continue to go there, it should have the full faith and credit from the state. So, yes, I think the answer to the first question is that it's very good for the state. It's very good for the taxpayers because it puts the state on the side of encouraging responsible use of dollars, of more economical use of dollars, and of rewarding schools that make academic progress. I strongly agree with Eugene Piccolo that there needs to be some minor modification, because there certainly are some schools, including some schools that have received national attention throughout the state, that focus exclusively on youngsters who come in at 17 and 18. So the three-year point that Mr. Piccolo made is an excellent one, and I certainly agree with it, and I know that Senator Salzman has been very gracious about making many modifications. So that is an important modification. But on balance, I think that the answer to the first question, is this good for the taxpayers and the state, the answer unquestionably is yes. The second question, is this good for the K through 12 system, district and charter public schools? Again, I think the answer is yes. As a parent of three youngsters who have attended St. Paul Public Schools, as the husband of a 30-year public school teacher, as the father of a person who works two children who work in the St. Paul Public Schools, I'm deeply committed to public education, whether district or charter. Our research has demonstrated how to close achievement gaps, eliminate achievement gaps around the country. We've succeeded in doing that. That's a subject for another day. But it seems to me that Senator Salzman has built in some skillful collaboration between district and charters. I'm delighted that the Minneapolis Schools has begun leasing, has sold some buildings that were vacant. I'm delighted that the Minneapolis Schools is currently sharing a building between the district and the charters. I'm delighted that the superintendent in St. Paul has started talking about doing this. There are other examples throughout the state, Faribault, for example, that has provided some facilities at modest cost to a charter public school. And this kind of thing that Senator Salzman and the chair are promoting is going to lead to more collaboration, which means better facilities for youngsters and better use of taxpayer dollars. So without going into greater detail, because I know there are others you want to hear from today, I think that the answer to the second question is yes. Is this good for the overall, not just the charters, is this good for the overall K through 12 system? I think the answer is unquestionably yes. The third question is this something that will encourage more excellent, not just more, charter school? Again, I think the answer is yes. There is a considerable amount of discussion on this issue throughout the country. We're currently working with the National Governors Association and governors in six states, Arizona, Colorado, Delaware, New Mexico, Nevada, and New York. And there is considerable discussion and considerable interest in what Minnesota is going to do because we have been the leader on so many education issues, whether it's computers or public school choice. We've been the leader in so many things. So I can tell you, having talked with governor's aides in a number of states, that there is considerable interest in this legislation. We should not provide funds to allow any charter public school to purchase a building. We should expect that there is some kind of bar and that schools have to show that they are fiscally responsible and that they are producing academic progress. That makes, in my view, this bill controversial within the charter communities. There are some who say, well, if kids want to go there and if it's getting its reports in on time, that ought to be enough. And I strongly and vigorously disagree. The state policy should not be just more charters or more district. It should be more excellent public schools, whether they're district and charter. For the reasons that I've tried to describe briefly, I think that this is important, indeed critical legislation. I commend the chair, members of the committee, and the chief author for its work on the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nathan. Any questions that members have? Thank you. Ms. Wallstein, Department of Education.
Lisa Barnage is going to speak.
Oh, I'm sorry. Lisa, Ms. Barnage. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lisa Barnage with the Department of Education. And we would just like to share our support for this bill and thank the author, as well as other stakeholders, for the long hours and much work they have put into this bill. We do think it is moving in the right direction. We do support the bill as it is, but are willing to continue to work to address the issues that were brought forth today by MAX, Center for School Change, and other stakeholders. We would, though, like to specifically note that the department does support the language currently in the bill about the academic growth, though we are willing to look at alternatives for charter schools that have unique populations.
Ms. Barnage, one of the things that we're working on with the governor and the House is how to craft a package related to the race to the top, and that would, you know, be addressing our next application for the race to the top funds. Is this something that could be included in that race to the top? Obviously, I think it tries to address an important area of education, and I think it moves the charter school the whole charter school kind of issue up a few steps and makes it a, I mean, as Senator Saltzman and has been mentioned, there's a growth and performance kind of a built-in measure. So please give your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Hartman from the Minnesota Department of Education. This perhaps could work to strengthen the application. The scores that already existed from the first round recognized Minnesota's commitment to charter schools, and in fact it was one of the highest scores of the entire application that exists. So I think it would only improve upon that particular aspect, because one of the aspects has to do with funding of charter schools. I don't believe that we would invest a whole lot of significant time to improve that section, but certainly this does improve upon our chances.
Good. Thank you. Senator Wiegar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking, and there was a possible 40 points for the race to the top for charter schools, and we had 38.8. And so maybe there's a little room for improvement from being the best to further improving.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Barnidge, just going back to some of the comments that Mr. Nathan made, and I think many of us share the idea that we want to encourage the growth and expansion of excellent schools, excellent public schools. And this section in the bill that puts some limitation on the ability of a charter school to expand or to grow in terms of facilities unless they show some academic performance. Has that structure been contemplated for public schools generally, not just the charter schools, but something like that been contemplated by the department for the same reasons that would apply more generally to public schools?
Ms. Barnidge?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, I would have to take that question back. I don't know myself. It looks like maybe Senator Saltzman does have a comment, though.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like Senator Saltzman also wants to answer that. But Senator Hahn, there's a couple things that we have for public schools. Number one, if a school district wants to expand their facilities, they go to the voters. And I actually believe that the voters care very much about how successful that school is when they make their decision, and that one of the biggest things that a school district has to do when they go out for referendum is demonstrate their effectiveness. So I think there is a built-in mechanism. In addition, I think going back to Race for the Top, that is a direction that the federal government is urging us all to move, as they suggest the model for turnaround schools. When you have schools that have not been performing at a certain level over time, they are asking states to put in much more rigorous requirements to turn that around. So while they're saying you, and to the point where they actually are saying you have to, one option is to shut it down. So I think that is a direction that we're going with regard to public education. While we may not in law as of yet been quite so clear about it, I think it's consistent with the values expressed both around this table in Minnesota and at a national level.
Senator Saltzman.
Here on that same point, Mr. Chair, and Senator Hand, just a couple, just a brief clarification is that that a charter school that did not meet whatever academic requirement ends up being in this bill doesn't mean they can't expand. It just means that prior to going forward to the authority to, you know, request being endorsed to purchase a building, that would be something to consider. And one of the authorizers who I talked with about this, who told me that their particular authorizer group, you know, supports this very much, is that her comment was that why would an authorizer close a school? And it would be because it wasn't reaching the academic goals. And if a school is closed, that puts the school at risk of not being able to pay off. So in other words, it's loan. So in other words, it is a threshold in terms of if we're going to create and provide funding for a permanent facility, these should be our schools that are our best schools. And even the academic performance now is just meeting the same percentage of medium and high growth as the state average, essentially. So we're not asking any more to be even better, although that's, I think, where many of us believe that charter schools have such potential, is that we really need to focus on closing the achievement gap. So those are the schools that we want to invest in, replicate. So just from a financial standpoint, and just clarify, it's not prohibiting them from expanding.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Barnage and Mr. Hartman. Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. I don't really have much to add to what Ms. Barnage said. The department appreciates the opportunity to have worked with Senator Saltzman and with Senate staff during the time that the bill has been drafted. It's been an incredible process. We've really appreciated all of the input and all of the improvements that have been made, and the openness of the Senate to working with us in terms of changes that we like to see, and we're very happy with the bill the way it is now.
Well, thank you, Dr. Melcher. You've always been very, very generous in helping us along. So,
thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask this of the earlier department reps, but may we assume that this is the position of Governor Pawlenty as well?
Let's see. Ms. Barnage?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the department and along with the MMB have been working very hard on this. I have not heard specifically from the governor's office, but we're definitely in support of the bill, and I could ask for a direct response.
Okay. Senator Hand? Excuse me, just a second. Senator Roebling, did you have your hand up before?
Not on this issue.
Oh, okay. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Barnes, appreciate you coming back. I guess kind of to that point that Senator Wieger is raising, and it was brought up last week in the hearing and then again today by Mr. Piccolo, the concern about the termination of charter school startup aid. Is that, as a policy matter, I find that a little troubling. I think it may, and I don't know how this plays into the expectations of the race to the top, but it seems to me that by doing that, we're sending a negative signal to charter schools generally, at least the whole project of charter schools. And is that anything that is a concern of the department at this point?
Ms. Barnage?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, I have not discussed that concern with people back at the department, but I will do so, and definitely with the Race to the Top application, we'll look into that.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Saltzman, as we move forward with this, are there any districts or any charter schools that will not be able to continue to function the way they have been? I remember the testimony from the administrator from Cologne, and am wondering if those concerns have all been taken care of, or if we have to do something with those who would be grandfathered in.
Senator Saltzman.
On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, we have worked extensively with schools, and it is my understanding that the way the language is written, that we have dealt with those schools that would not qualify. There is one school that we have had a conversation with. I will continue to have a conversation with them. It is not the Cologne School, but we believe that we have talked with schools about if they don't believe they're going to qualify under this particular language, with working with Hiawatha Leadership Academy, Yinghua, and Great River School, we move them to transition aid, so that if they are working with a building company that their purpose is to provide the charter school facility and do not meet the other requirements, we would be willing to, you know, to work with them to move them to transition. But part of that is then that when the loan is paid off, the charter school is able to own the school. So if there are charter schools that we, you know, have looked at that, Mr. Nauman and I have consulted. I think that some people have said that there is some, they're not clear on the language, but when we have looked at that, we will work with the department in advance to see if they believe any of the schools would not qualify. So it's really a hold harmless bill. It is changing things moving forward, and it may potentially change who charter schools work with in terms of, you know, expanding in the future, having, you know, to go through this authority. But the intent has not been. Now, there is some change in the grandfather for the lease aid, and we've worked with that, you know, tried to put language in. One of the things that we find throughout this day, I think perhaps I can't remember if I've mentioned it this hearing or last time or in other, you know, conversations, is that when you look at businesses across the state, they are renegotiating. They are going to their landlords and renegotiating their leases. And I think that that's something that we're just suggesting that we should be doing that, that just because we have this amount of money, should we not at least be encouraging that kind of discussion? So those are some schools that have expressed some concerns, and we want to work with them, but we also want to look at our present economy and how we can respond to the current challenges in that and also the economic conditions.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, in that last comment that you made, are you suggesting that this actually is giving leverage? This movement is actually giving leverage for some to renegotiate leases. Right.
Senator Saltzman.
On that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I spoke with a charter school that came to my office earlier this year, and I won't name them because I don't want to name them, but they were talking about the unallotment and how it was affecting them. And they said one of the first things they did is they went to their landlord and they said, we need to renegotiate our lease. It's just our funding is different. And she said it was renegotiated like that. And I'm not suggesting that every charter school can go out and do that. But the fact is that, you know, I know in my community I met with our business community and there are a number of you know, business leaders there who have commercial building and talking about how they're working with their current businesses to try to work with them and how they're going to get through this particular climate and keep their buildings filled up and also keep them running. So I would suggest that it would be worth our while to suggest that why can't our charter schools be doing that as well, especially when we hear repeatedly from our charter school community. I think today we're even looking at how can we encourage that because the money is sitting there. And because it's public money, should we not be trying to be as you know, responsible in how if it's just sitting there, it's available, can we, you know, a business has greater negotiating power. So I think that this could help. I can't guarantee that, but I think it's worth a try.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this proposal before this committee takes action on it? The process is that we would pass and send this to the Committee on Finance. And Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, as a member of Senator Saltzman's Committee on Charter Schools, and I know it's been said at the table, but I think we should say it here. Senator Saltzman's process was thorough. It was systematic. And her tenacity at tracking down every one of the nuances that people brought to her is something to be commended. This is a terrific piece of legislation. I can't do anything but echo what Mr. Nathan said. I had my own trepidations in the beginning, but where she has brought this to is something that I think we can all be very proud of, and I want to thank her for the work she did on this.
Thank you very much. And I think all of the committee, too, I want to express my gratitude to all the committee members that sat so patiently through quite a number of hearings. And it has changed. It has evolved. And it probably will continue a little bit as you move through this process. So I do extend my gratitude to the committee and certainly to you, Senator Saltzman. So, Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo those comments and also thank the staff because this is groundbreaking legislation, and I know it took everyone, Senator Saltzman leadership, the committee, as well as the staff. So thank you, staff.
And who knows, we might gain a point and a half on that. Senator Saltzman.
Just to close, Mr. Chair, I think that, you know, Senator Rummel, thank you for that comment, but you really hit the nail on the head. In that when our committee started, it was Senator Rummel, Senator Olson, Senator Wieger, Senator Bonhoeff, and Senator Scogin, and Senator Hahn, I had no idea what this bill was going to look like. And I think there's some things in this bill that we didn't even know about. And I think the issue of the ownership of buildings was not on the table, but as we listened, and I also want to thank, I mean, our staff were absolutely incredible. Mr. Nauman, I know you don't like being thanked, but you have been fabulous.
Sure.
And Dr. McClay, if you're listening and holding your new baby girl, we're just great. And also, you know, to Ms. Yunker, who is going to continue to follow this bill through its journey. But also our business community, that we've reached out to a number of different groups that we typically do not work with. And I think it's an example of how we can do really great things when we all sit down and really listen to the facts and look at options, we can do really great things for not only the students of this state, but the taxpayers, and really to be the shining North Star that our state is. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me this opportunity and the time that you've given to this issue.
Thank you. On the Senate file 2716 as amended, and this will go to the Mr. Nolan.
Mr. Chair, just maybe to recap what you have in front of you, there was originally Senate File 2716, which last week had two amendments, the A18 and the A20 amendments, and then today an A25 amendment. The A20 and the A25 both amended the A18. So that is what is in front of you.
Okay. Senator Hahn.
Just before we do that, just Mr. Nauman, if you would answer a question. The fiscal note that we have, is this tied to the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, I'm glad you asked that. There's a couple of issues associated with the fiscal note. I think the fiscal tracking sheet that you have is a little bit more reflective of what is in front of you. The fiscal note, due to timeliness, was performed on the A18 amendment. I don't think substantively you will find a difference, although there is one peculiarity that generates a little bit of savings that was not picked up in the fiscal note, and we just noticed it this morning, and that is that the credit enhancement account is in the special revenue fund, and when the management and budget portion of the fiscal note was performed, it assumed that that was in the general fund, and I think that the department agrees that that should be accurately reflected as part of the special revenue fund. So relative to the general fund, it shows a touch more savings than would have been shown if the fiscal note had picked that up.
Any other questions? Okay, Senator Saltzman moves that Senate File 2716 with the amendments that Mr. Nauman mentioned be recommended to be passed and sent to the full Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also committee members.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Saltzman, and thank you very much, committee members. The we will have, just to update members, Representative Greiling and leadership of both the House and the Senate and myself met with Governor Pawlenty, and we are working on a number of things, primarily around a package of ideas to address the Race to the Top application, kind of enhance, which really does include a number of things that the governor has suggested in his proposals to us or for this session, which are on our table right now, but we also are working on some other things. And next Tuesday, I believe, and what time?
8:30 in the morning, we will be having a joint House and Senate Education Committee meeting related to those ideas. And so that will occur in room 200. Okay. In the state office building. And I would invite all of you to come. It will probably not be the end of that discussion, because on Wednesday there is a Minneapolis, I believe it's Minneapolis, but probably the Department of Education as well, is hosting a all-day meeting for the U.S. Well, the U.S. Department of Education is hosting an all-day meeting in Minneapolis for 48 states, because two of the states actually won the Race to the Top application, Delaware and Tennessee. And so they will be there as well to share their ideas and suggestions. And the whole purpose of that meeting on Wednesday is to try to help us or help states, because the other states will be there too that are actually in this application process, and help us to refine our ideas. And we're hoping that the combination of what we're working on and what the U.S. Department of Education is going to share with us and discuss, we'll be able to offer an application that will be successful. Now, we're not guaranteeing anything, because there's still a lot of issues that are there's disagreement about, and we're trying to bring some sort of a consensus around at least some of the ideas and refine them, kind of, what's that saying about learning how to speak Minnesotan? We want to put our own fingerprints on it, and so it works. And works for us, because I think the first and most important thing is that we develop good education policy, not that we just get the application in and do it. Because when you look at the dollars that are available, and you divide that over 4 years, the actual dollar amount is not going to be huge. But because Minnesota is an education state, and we've always been very progressive and in terms of education and quality education, we would like to be in the running and offer good ideas that move us forward. So that's the process of next week, and I think that actually takes care of, and I don't think we've heard from leadership as to what the actual agenda is beyond that, but that'll take care of Tuesday and Wednesday. So hopefully there'll be some interesting hearings and maybe even better, some, if we can come out with something, that'll even be better. So thank you. Committee is adjourned.
Very good. Is there-